17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2. All engines running.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are willing to control, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. AJ at a descent. Air control mode auto, descent engine command override off. Engine arm on. 413 is in.
We stop to get down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This is Cosmic Perspective Radio. I'm your host, Andy Paneros. Just a few weeks ago, I attended the New Horizons Pluto Flyby event at the Applied Physics Lab at Johns Hopkins University. During the event, NASA Director of Planetary Science, Dr. Jim Green, discussed and answered questions on many interesting topics in an open forum with the media. This is part one of a two-part series of discussions by Dr. Green during one of the most important events in space exploration, the New Horizons flyby of Pluto and its moons.
You know, this is a historic event. You know, certainly in my career, it's a pinnacle. We're going to be learning something about a completely new population in our solar system. You know, Pluto was discovered in 1930, thought to be that last planet bounding everything we knew about our solar system. And then, you know, the space program began. Pluto was only 32 years old from our knowledge. In 1962, we had our first spacecraft, Mariner 2, which was successful, and it was a flyby. And in fact, ever since then, we started the process of being very methodical as we explored our solar system. We did that with flyby, orbit, land, rove, and return samples to those parts of the solar system we feel compelled to understand more deeply. Then in the 1990s, you know, just a short 25 years ago, we began observing objects from ground-based telescopes that are Pluto-like beyond the orbit of Pluto. This particular region is called the Kuiper Belt, named after Gerald Kuiper, who in the 50s had proposed that there should be some debris left over from the collapsing cloud that formed our solar system, and that debris should be beyond the orbit of Pluto. So as we observed more and more of these, we recognized indeed that that was the case, and that this is what we would call another major zone of our solar system. What I mean by that is, if you step back and look, we have our terrestrial planets close to the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth on our moon, and Mars, and of course the asteroid belt is actually a planet that would have been created had it not been for Jupiter. Jupiter actually keeps those pieces apart from becoming a planet. Those would be our terrestrial planets, our inner zone. Then we have our gas giants at the outer part of our solar system. Those are beyond a region where water can only exist in ice form without heat to be able to melt it or vaporize it. And those ice giants, of course, are Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And now we have the third major portion of our solar system discovered, the Kuiper Belt. We've never been there. You know, when the Voyagers flew by, those gas giants, and they were flybys. That's what we do initially, is fly by these to determine how important they are for us to go back and visit. The cameras were turned off as they went through the Kuiper Belt. So it was not known then. It was an unknown region. You didn't need the cameras. You'd seen everything there was to see. Now, how wrong we are to think that. The third zone, the Kuiper Belt, we're about ready to crack open with our flyby of Pluto and understand what this body is all about. And the more we look at it, the more we're so fascinated with it. You know, it's about the size of the United States, but it has an atmosphere, and it's an extensive one at that. The major composition of the atmosphere of Pluto, anyone know? Nitrogen. What other bodies in our solar system have a significant amount of nitrogen? The Earth and Titan, okay? And now Pluto. It has trace gases in it also. Those are extremely important. It has a variety of hydrocarbons. And its interaction with the solar wind and the sunlight so far away from the sun is perhaps some new physics we want to learn and understand. We want to know the geology of this body. We want to know how it's changed over time. We want to know everything we can from a flyby. And New Horizons, as a first attempt to look at this body, is doing a fabulous job. You know, over time, we've talked about putting missions in, to go out to Pluto over the last 20 years or so. Actually, even earlier than that, I guess it was the late 60s or so, the idea of the grand tour, let's fly by all the outer planets, and that included Pluto. And in putting all those missions together, they didn't quite all work out, and it never really happened. But New Horizons is really the mission we wanted all along, and we've got it. And it's there now. And it's a matter of a few million miles away. One of my science friends died yesterday. Claudia Alexander was a cometary scientist. She was with me when we were in Darmstadt during the encounter and landing a fillet on comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. What a fabulous scientist she was. What a fabulous event that was for mankind, for the Earth. And her death reminds me of how fragile life is. And her science reminds me of how lucky we are as scientists to move the boundaries of our knowledge so far as we have with the comet landing of Philae and, of course, the flyby of Pluto. We are really lucky to be alive to do that and see it. So those are some of my thoughts, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
As the New Horizons spacecraft closes in on Pluto and its moons, Dr. Green discusses the science data collected, the challenges of the mission team before the encounter, and the knowledge we'll gain from the mission.
Oh, yeah, every day is something new. Oh, every day the images reveal. You're looking at them like I'm looking at them as the team gets them in the morning and post things out on the web. I probably am unlike the team members in that I would just speculate the heck out of it. And yet, as the scientists are trying to be, you know, let's not say something that we're not quite sure of. And so that means it's going to take a little time. It's going to take a while for them to really understand the physics of what they're seeing and interpret it appropriately. The multiple images are so critical for us because it provides us stereo pairs. It provides us views from different angles, and that's important because then it tells us about the relief. It tells us, are those mountains, are craters, are they clouds, are they atmospheric features, are they shadows? So that's a critical element of taking the images as we've done along the way. The other thing that's really critical is, may come to surprise you, but we really don't know where Pluto's at. Isn't that funny, the way I said that? But in reality, it's true. It has an orbit, it goes around the sun of 247 plus years. It's only been known for 85 years, and so we haven't observed it through a whole orbit. And so that means we're only estimating its position. And so we also have to, along the way, take navigation images. You know, Pluto's here. Let's find its edge. Compare that with where we thought it was. Make any adjustments we need to. And the team has been doing a fabulous job of doing that on a regular basis. That's critical for us to fly by this object in the right way. You know, everything's done in an automated fashion. The upload is on, and it's running on automatic, and that means it's taking things in a certain sequence. And if we don't have it right and we take the image here because we think Pluto's there and it's there, then we missed it. That would not be a good day. And so, you know, all that work has to go on behind the scenes that you don't see. All the team that takes that data in and looks at it, makes determinations of what kind of course corrections we need to make. And they've done a fabulous job because in the last several days, there's been no uploads needed. We're going to be flying by it very, very close to the time we thought we would. And that means then the total sequence as set up is just perfect. It's just perfect for us to execute. Everything will be in its frame. The images will be just the way we expect them. And the data, of course, will thrill us.
After New Horizons' primary mission, will there be an extended mission to other objects in the Kuiper Belt?
That's a hot topic 6 or 9 months ago. And I'd be willing to bet the team is not focused on that at the moment. But let me tell you how it will go. After the encounter and after some of the initial analysis that is done and things get rolling, the team will have to turn its attention to going back to thinking about the next possible thing that New Horizons would do in an extended mission. And there are quite a few things that it could do. Prior to this, for many years, while New Horizons was largely in hibernation, the team worked really hard to see if there were Kuiper Belt objects beyond Pluto that it could go to. Used nearly every large major ground-based facility you can imagine on more than one occasion, and also many of the space-based assets. And the one that really proved out well for the team was Hubble. Hubble observed several objects. Right now there are two potential objects, Kuiper Belt objects, that are in that thin cone that extend beyond Pluto that we could actually get to and fly by. And so the team will probably turn its attention to developing what would be called a senior review proposal. We call it that. It's an extended mission proposal because we have a group of senior scientists come in and help review those to make sure those are the top scientific steps that we want to do next with any mission. And flying by Pluto and through the Pluto system is indeed the prime mission. An extended mission would have to then come through a proposal process and be peer-reviewed. If it reviews well, that's one part of the approval. The second part of the approval is we've got to be able to work within the administration and within Congress to be able to have the funding to do it. And then there are potentially programmatic decisions with any mission that comes along. There is a process in place right now that we have approved for which the New Horizons team will present the pros and cons to going to one or the other object to NASA headquarters before the end of August. And it's from that we will give them the approval to be able to make the course correction to fly by one. So you can't get to both of them. It's either going to be one or the other. So what are the pros and cons? So we will set up the mission to be able to do that. But as I said, they still have to justify why it would be important to go buy another Kuiper Belt object and what it would do along the way. November, I forgot the exact date, but sometime in November, they'll have to do the course correction. If they go into December or January, they're on a different course and they won't fly by any of the Kuiper Belt objects that are currently in consideration.
Dr. Green discusses what we know about the solar system beyond the Kuiper Belt.
Well, in terms of, as I said, what we think now is the basic inventory of our solar system. And oh, by the way, we've been proven wrong before by flying by Pluto. That would be our initial examination or exploration of our solar system. You know, hopefully then that would tell us about all those basic elements. We can't get to the very distant one, which is the Oort cloud. The Oort cloud is a set of comets that are in a sphere around the sun that are held by the sun by the very fingertips of its gravity. And that's at 50,000 astronomical units away, or one light year away. And so as the sun moves around the galaxy, this whole cloud moves with it. If you're further than that, you can be pulled out and not be part of the solar system. But if you're within that, typically the sun can hang on to you. Now that part, those comets come in every once in a while. So it's not like we have to run out 50,000 AU. They come in. I mean, that's what's really great about them. And indeed, they have done that. We've seen a number of those in the last couple of years. We get several a century, but just in the last couple of years, we've seen three or four of them. So there's been an unusual number of those coming in, one of which was called Sighting Spring, flew right in front of Mars. Mars was pelted in the northern hemisphere by cometary material from an Oort cloud comet, and we got to image the size of it. It's the first time we ever saw, ever resolved the size of a comet nuclei from an Oort cloud, and that only was about 500 meters in size. It was a much smaller object than we all thought.
Where does NASA stand on the classification of Pluto?
So NASA's position is really quite simple. We do not care what we call this at all. It's an object well worth observing. It's a critical object for us to understand because it's an archetype of a whole new population of objects in our solar system we didn't even know was in existence up to about 30 years ago, 25 years or so ago. In terms of calling it a dwarf planet, let me take you back in history a little bit. You know, telescopes were getting really good at the turn of the 1800s. You know, they started observing with bigger mirrors and looking at a variety of more objects and extending our knowledge of the solar system beyond Jupiter. And so if you walked into a library in 1850 and went to that textbook and you were going to memorize the names of all the planets in 1850, how many planets would you need to know their names of? 11? 50? Wow. Hey, this is really pretty good because I usually get 4 or 5. It's a trick question, and the answer is 22. And the reason, yeah, so where the heck are all these other planets? Well, they were seeing Ceres and Vesta and Juno and Eros and bodies in the asteroid belt. And then in 1852, when the astronomers got together and they said, okay, we now recognize that this group of bodies, that we haven't been able to resolve their disks, their points of light, their motion in the sky tells us where they are, and they exist between Mars and Jupiter. And now that we know much more about these objects, we'll call them the asteroid belt. And so, you know, we have a spacecraft in the asteroid belt right now that is doing a fabulous job. It's Dawn. It orbited Vesta, which is about 500 kilometers in diameter, and we now know that's a basic building block of a planet. It's big enough that it differentiated, has a big iron core in the middle, and it's just the start of what planets should be like. And Dawn has gone on from Vesta and is now orbiting Ceres, got into orbit around Ceres. And that's also quite a spectacular body. It's twice the size of Vesta. It's about a 900 or so kilometers in size. And it's a really peculiar body in that we're seeing all sorts of features on it that I would say, man, that makes it hard for me to call it an asteroid. You know, if it's got bright spots and maybe a Kuiper belt object. We don't know enough about how the Kuiper belt object is migrated through our solar system. We do believe that Triton is a Kuiper belt object, which is also a moon of Neptune. Not sure of that, but most of the scientists are betting that way. And so by going by Pluto, we'll get a better idea as to how all these objects are related. That's also very important because it tells us that if these objects were actually created in a much distant place, why in the heck are they in different locations? How did they get all mixed up? And planetary dynamics now tells us that our solar system, in particular our giant planets, are currently not in the locations where they actually formed. They formed at a different location, and they moved. Now that's unbelievable when you think about it. A body the size of Jupiter or Saturn, Uranus or Neptune actually moving around out in the solar system. That's unbelievable. But there's plenty of evidence now that indicates both physical and certainly computer modeling that about 800 million years after the solar system actually formed, a tug of war, a gravitational tug of war between Jupiter and the outer planets, pushed them outward, and brought in the Kuiper belt, and brought in the asteroids, and brought in a significant amount of water, perhaps, to the inner part of our solar system. So there's always the debate going on right now is how much of the water is we have on the Earth, intrinsic to the Earth, and how much of the water was brought in from an event like that. We call that the late heavy bombardment. And it ranges from 10% to maybe 60 or more percent. So that's a pretty hot topic. I think we'll have a much better understanding of that in the next decade or so. And seeing Pluto and understanding it better will probably help us in that way.
Dr. Green talks about future unmanned NASA missions.
We don't know enough about other objects in our solar system either to know how they relate to the Kuiper belt. There's a set of objects called the Trojans that are captured in Lagrangian points at Jupiter. And we have that in our sights. Upcoming competition of what we call the New Frontiers. New Horizons is our first New Frontiers mission. Our second New Frontiers mission was Juno, and Juno's about ready to get into orbit around Jupiter in July of next year. A third one we're building right now called OSIRIS-REx, that's going to go to an asteroid and bring back a precious sample, very unusual asteroid. Carbonaceous chondrite, one that is a very prized set of material. And then the next competition for New Frontier opportunities will start in this next fiscal year, in FY16. We'll put out an announcement for them. And one of those is indeed going to Trojans, touring around and looking at those objects that are trapped at those Lagrangian points at Jupiter's orbit. So that's 5 AU away. We don't know what they are. Are they Kuiper belt objects? Are they asteroids? Are they a combination of both? And so I think by looking at Pluto and its environment and the five moons in great detail that we'll have the opportunity to do that, we'll also help with that context. So those are all important steps that we will do in the next 5 or 8 years. After that, there'll be a new planetary decadal that the scientists will come together and debate what are the top questions that we want to do in that decade. And we'll see if Kuiper Belt objects rise to the top. They're certainly proving to be quite exciting. I have no doubt that they'll play some role in the major science discussions for that next decade.
In conclusion of part one, Dr. Green comments on the amazement of man's first flight to the flyby of Pluto in just a little more than 100 years.
Yeah, it is. But you're only looking back a little ways, okay? But this has been going on our whole history. Modern man starts when? When modern man was able to modify his environment. When is that? They were nomads for millions of years until they figured out how to grow crops, agriculture. That's 10,000 years ago. That's hardly any time. 10,000 years ago, from that to the Great Pyramids, to the beautiful civilizations that we've seen that have come and have gone in the history of this planet, to the shuttle, to the space exploration that we've done. I mean, all you have to do is look back, and I'm constantly in awe of the ability that the human species has. And that's why I think we need to move off this planet, too. I think a single planet species cannot long survive, and we need to move off of it, and we need to go to Mars. And the Mars program that we have now, where we are understanding everything that we can possibly understand, will allow that to happen. And I'd like to see that first step in my lifetime, to know that we're on the right track.
From man's first flight by the Wright brothers in 1903, to the New Horizons journey into an unexplored zone of the solar system in 2015, to the future of man inhabiting another planet, we are only limited by our thoughts and ideas. Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Panero's production.